You're listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux and Matt Somerville.
I think we may end up infuriating some people with this episode. This is Predictably Drunk. Thank you, Ross Baker, for the beautiful intro. I am Sam Marcoux, along with Matt Somerville. How are you doing?
Ross Baker!
Ross is the straw that stirs this shitty drink of whatever it is that you and I are. I don't know what...
He's also the glass, though. He's pretty much everything that has to do with this show. Without him, we'd be nothing.
We gotta figure out a way to get Ross on the show a little bit more often than we do. I mean,
enough. That's a fair amount. This is enough, but it's a good structure to have.
You know, every now and then I say something stupid, and I'm glad you're there to just straighten me out. You're right. Ross doesn't need to be on the show any more than he is. We love Ross, but stay over there, Ross. We don't need you all the time.
Stick to what you're good at.
I would love his opinion on what we're going to talk about, because Matt and I were talking a little bit earlier today, and I think just kind of let you guys know what's on tap for the episode here today. We are going to introduce a new segment. We're excited about this. We talked about this, called the Stupid Drunken News segment. We're going to be talking about that towards the end of the show. And then before that, we were talking about, you know, Matt's in the industry, you know, the movie industry, and he's...
There's many industries.
Yeah, and he's involved with them, you know. name one, he's there.
By the way, fucking on tap, I don't know if you guys caught that because it was so casual, very thematic for this show.
We are considered, it's kind of weird, Matt, in this podcast world, we are considered a little bit of the experts when it comes to, I guess, drinking.
People
think we know more than we do. It's kind of funny. We are just two guys who drink a lot, and we know what we like, and we know what we don't like, essentially. But since we have microphones and fancy equipment, people just assume that we are experts. So I'm going to go ahead
and take advantage of that.
Yeah, we're going to declare ourselves experts right here and now. So you are listening to two experts here on Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. We are going to talk a little bit about the best and worst movies of Quentin Tarantino here in a little bit. Matt is going to lead that discussion because he told me some of these decisions that he has for this list. And I got to tell you, I think that a little bit of they're kind of controversial, Matt. I think you...
I'm going to get a lot of people who disagree with that, I think.
You're going to get some flack.
Part of it.
You're going to get some flack, but that's okay. But before we do that, since we are on tap and we are the experts, we might as well talk about what we are drinking or what we have been drinking here recently. And we're going to do a little bit more than normal here, folks, because usually Matt and I will talk about what we're drinking, and that's just about it. We just kind of name it and move on. And we were told recently, you know, maybe you guys should review the alcohol that you're drinking and let the masses know if it's good or not, if it sucks, if, you know, where you should be drinking it, that type of shit. So I think we're going to try that. I think we're going to try to review shit that matters too. Like, we're not going to review shitty movies that everyone else is reviewing on their podcast, right? Like, people can go to the movies and then tell you that, yes, Marvel superhero movies are good or bad and there's explosions. That's boring. Everybody does that shit. We're not going to review shitty ass music that nobody gives a crap about, that no one would ever hear about. We're here to enlighten something that will enrich your everyday lives. And we're talking alcohol, because who doesn't love alcohol, right?
Right.
So what are you drinking? Do us the honor, Matt. What are you drinking right now?
Okay, well, I'm going to say that I was at a bar earlier.
This is true. This is fact.
Some of you might be able to tell that based on my speech. At the bar, which was a German bar called the Red Lion Tavern, I was drinking Spaten Optimator, and I had three of those tall boys. And I shouldn't say tall boys, because that would give the illusion that it was in a can. It was not. I was just referring to them as boys that were tall. Dark beer. Optimator is fucking delicious. It's got the right amount of sweet. It's not too heavy. It's beautiful and dark. It's a sexy beer. If you like German beer, I would go with the Optimator. It's very good. Very good.
So Optimator is actually a great name for a German beer. I think German beer should be known as it shouldn't be German beer. It should be like, I'm drinking Optimator, and everyone would know that that would be beer from Germany. That's such a German name. I don't even know what that means. What does Optimator mean?
I have no idea. I just drink it. And now that I'm home, I had to rely on what was in the fridge, and it's less than respectable, I think. I'm currently drinking Coney Island Hard Ginger Ale.
Jesus Christ, are you going to work tomorrow? Are you just calling in hungover? Like the, you're listing off all these beers. Let's stick with Optimator for the sake of this conversation here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sam beat that out anyway for my respect, my self-respect. Optimator is fantastic. I've never actually, outside of the Red Lion Tavern, I've never seen it anywhere else.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the, because I know what Spaten is, but I think Spaten in general, like if you're doing Oktoberfest, Spaten's one of those, it's like their general like pale ale that's available to everybody, right? Yeah. It's not the Optimator. So this might be one of those things that's only available via, you know, going to the bar, which is kind of smart. If in the beer world, sometimes you can get things canned, you can get things in a growler or a crowler and things of that nature. But other times there's just releases like Pliny the Younger, for example, where you can only go to the bar and drink it there. And that kind of drives business to local taverns and drives business to go get those beers. So Optimator, were you and your friends that you're out with, was everybody drinking this, or did you kind of go rogue and say, look, you guys stick with your swill and whatever you're doing, I'm going with Optimator?
There were five of us that were drinking, and three of them, including myself, ordered the Optimator.
General consensus from everybody. Good beer.
Majority wins. Yeah.
There it is. So there you go. So we got a happy drunk here on the Optimator. I'm actually, I was drinking a Working Man's Brew. It's called the 9 to 5 Pale Ale. This is something actually out of Livermore, California. This guy, he's a local brew guy, basically making a, the name of the beer company is what he's doing. He's trying to come up with beers that, appeal to the working man, you know, the blue collar grit under the fingernails type shit. That being said, I drank this at a 5-year-old's birthday party over the weekend. It was in a tap, little pony keg. And not only was it fun, I think I sent you photos of this, Matt. Not only was it fun to drink, tasted well, I actually made beer balloons out
of this. You filled them, you filled balloons with this working man's heart, like blood and sweat. You're like, fuck it, I'm going to throw it into a balloon.
Well, the blood and sweat is actually his red ale, but the 9 to 5 pale ale that I had is actually, it was amazing because not only can you drink it and taste it well, it's a pale ale. So it's one of those things you drink during the summer, right? You hang out, it's exactly what it is. It's a kegger beer. So it's not anything you're going to sit there and swirl around in your mouth and go, yes, I can feel all the different ingredients. It's more of a, hey, man, relaxing, kicking back, drinking it.
Did you like it?
I did like it. You know, I'm not a big pale ale fan myself in general. It's not the thing I go to if I'm looking for a style of beer. But a pale ale is perfect when you're out in the sun. You know, it's warm. It's 80 degrees. You're hanging out with your friends, having a good time. It's something you can just sip on and not worry about getting too obliterated in the sun. And it's not going to overwhelm you with too many things where you're like, wow, I really need to sip this. It's something you can just drink and not even think about it. It's kind of like, I put it this way. It's the long snapper of beer. So in football, if you're talking about the long snapper, it means he did something wrong. Cause if he does his job right, you never think about it. You never talk about it. That's what pale ale is in the beer family, as far as I'm concerned. And the only reason I am talking about it is because it was the last beer that I actually had. And it was something that was like, hey, you know what? This isn't offensive. And on top of it, it's a fun beer because the kegerator had enough pressure in it that I actually was able to fill up a couple of water balloons with this beer, this 9 to 5 pale ale, and sneak it into the water balloon fight pile. So somewhere along the way, somebody was throwing water balloons later that day and they got themselves a sticky beer bomb instead of just a water balloon dousing.
So, I hope they had their mouth open.
I really hope it was one of the kids, you know?
One of the 5-year-olds. That's what I was talking about. Yeah. An introduction into beer drinking. You know what? I'm going to say this. This show is wonderful in so many ways. One of the ways is that it allows me to just be free with my speech and just my self-respect. I'm going to admit this. You said long snapper. I thought it was a fish reference. I honestly thought you were referring to some kind of fish joke, and I'm feeling rather retarded now.
Well,
that I realize that that's not true.
That's fine. I mean, you're drinking 17 different beers in one night. You're drinking Optimators. Yeah. You're drinking Coney
Island
Ginger Ales.
It's incredible that I'm awake.
Yeah. It really is. This is late. We are doing this late. It's a late night podcast. We just reviewed some beer. I guess we reviewed it. Did we review it? I guess I liked mine.
I reviewed the shit out of both of them.
Yeah. You would drink yours just about anywhere, right? It's a nice bar beer. You're sitting in a bar.
Yeah.
I would
drink it in the bathtub.
I don't know if I would actually order mine out at a bar, other than the fact that, like, I, you know, it's a local beer and I like to drink local if I can. But it is something that, again, if you're in a party atmosphere, it's a good beer. I think 9 to 5 by Working Man is Working Man Beer Company.
Is that like a beer pongable beer?
You can absolutely do a beer pong if you wanted to do beer pong. It's a party beer. That's probably the best way to put it. You can definitely.
That's where I was going with it. Yeah.
You can pass this around. You know, like I said, it's in a keg. I mean, that right says enough
there,
right there.
There it is.
It's a kegable beer. Put it that way. It is definitely a kegable beer for working me in.
I've heard this before, and this is sort of like the legend of parties. When you're at a party and you're playing beer pong, and you're always doing it with like fucking beer that nobody wants to really spend money on, like Keystone Ice.
Exactly.
And then the one guy at the party speaks up and he's like, "Oh man, this is, you know, this is fun, but I'll tell you what, the one time that we used JD for beer pong, that was some crazy shit." And I've never been to a party where I've seen anyone attempt hard liquor with beer pong, but it's always a fucking story that comes out every single time. Sam, have you ever been to a party where hard liquor was substituted for beer?
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember my line of work as a stand-up comedian. There's always going to be somebody that says this is boring and how do we make it better? I know, change right. beer for something that's got more liquor in it. I'll tell you something. I was thinking about this today. I was like, wow, I was out of control. I was in Vegas a couple of years ago, and I actually woke up after a night of drinking and didn't want to stop drinking. I mean, we're talking a level of drinking where I'm drinking in the shower, drinking while taking a shit, drinking while ordering a drink. You know, it was just a lot of drinking.
Being in Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, and I woke up the next morning, and I'm like, wow, I should really get some coffee, but I didn't want to go to the sink to put water in the coffee cup in the thing. So I actually just had vodka, which was closer, and I brewed the coffee with vodka as opposed to water. So, I mean, I guess that's something you could chalk up to, you know, I guess updating the norm of
being in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the, kind of the equivalent of old man equivalent of your beer pong with Jack Daniels as opposed to
there
beer.
You go. Okay.
Speaking of you feeling like an asshole, because you said you felt like an asshole because of the fish reference that wasn't.
Yeah.
I think like this next segment here, we're talking about, we'll just transition over to what you and I were talking about a little bit earlier via text message. And that is, the great Quentin Tarantino. I think you're a big fan of Quentin Tarantino yourself. Are you not?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to make this note is that, you know, you could take somebody who really does not pay attention to movies at all, and you can still drop a couple names in front of them in terms of movie directors, and they wouldn't know who that person is. Quentin Tarantino is one of them. Another one would be like, say, Steven Spielberg.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you know, maybe Francis Ford Coppola, maybe Martin Scorsese, maybe Woody Allen. Right. Ah. Okay. So I've lost you already. But there is a very, very rare few where it's almost unanimous that someone would know that person. And Quentin Tarantino is absolutely one of those directors. And it's an event when a movie of his comes out. It's a complete event. Everybody's talking about it. You know, it could come out on Christmas. It could come out on Hanukkah. Like, it doesn't matter. People will go to see the Quentin Tarantino movie, whatever it's about. They will see the new one. And, I don't think that he's the perfect director that everyone chalks him up to be. I love him and I think he makes amazing films. But he does have a few misses, and I think that's what this list is about.
I think I know your list on the worst. We're going to get to that in a second. What are your top three, just real quick, top three favorite Quentin Tarantino movies off the top of your head?
Quick question. Am I allowed to reference a movie that he wrote but did not direct, or is this strictly directed?
I shit, it's our show. We do whatever the fuck we want, yeah.
Right, okay. So top three.
Number one.
The one that everyone's probably thinking of is Pulp Fiction, and it should be because that is the best thing that he's ever done. Quentin Tarantino redefined the meaning of cool with Pulp Fiction. He came from, I think it was Tennessee. He was working at a video store. He had seen every movie under the sun, and he just really... He really got it. I mean, he would watch James Dean movies and Humphrey Bogart movies and just all of these old flicks. And somehow he just combined every single idea of cool that has ever been in film. And he created this new cool. and damn near every single line from that movie is just the coolest thing any fucking human being has ever heard. And he did so in a way that we weren't used to, by introducing segments of the story completely out of order. You know, you would see one segment, you'd say, hey, that's a character that I've seen already, but they were in a different scenario at a different time. Holy shit, how is this all going to add up? And you get to the end of the film and it all adds up. And it's completely unapologetic. I should say that right. Let me try it again. Unapologetic. It swears its fucking face off. It's very violent. It's got some deeply dark shit in it, you know, with the Gimp and Zed. Pulp Fiction, number one.
Number two.
I'm going to use a movie that he wrote, and that's True Romance.
See, this is a movie I've never seen before, but this is a movie that a lot of Quentin Tarantino fans reference a lot. So I'm interested, just as quickly as you can, like what makes this movie so good?
Real quick, True Romance was directed by the late Tony Scott. Rest in peace, sir. He wrote it pretty early on in his career, and he did the same thing. He did that sort of out of order narrative. Tony Scott decided to do away with that in the final cut of the movie, which is fine. It didn't matter. I've seen Tarantino's cut before, and it didn't matter. It was fine either way. The cool thing about True Romance is, again, the definition of cool. I mean, Tarantino just knows this to a T. He knows what cool is. And what I'll say about True Romance is that it's packed with just every fucking star imaginable. It has Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Brad Pitt, Val Kilmer,
I love that you set up that it has every star imaginable, and the first name out of your mouth
Christian Slater. He's the shit.
I got nothing against Christian Slater. He's a listener of this show. He listens to Predictably Drunk. He's a great guy. But I don't know. I mean, the names you said after that, James Gandolfini, Brad Pitt, those are actual stars. Christian Slater. Right. I mean, Christian Slater is renting.
Back then, he was a big deal. Okay. And he's the main character. I went to the main character first.
My favorite Christian Slater moment ever is when he dies in that one movie where he's got a bad heart. Wow. That's the best.
Tom Sizemore, Chris Penn. There's just so many people.
All of these people are dead. This is a very depressing cast of. I mean, Tom Sizemore isn't dead, but his career is. So, I mean, that might as well.
He might as well have been dead for quite some time.
Okay, so he's got an ensemble cast. That's one of the things that Quentin – I mean, if we could chalk up Quentin Tarantino, he's got a lot of names, you know, people buying, especially now because he's got the cachet behind.
But it's really like by the title itself, it really is True Romance. In the most violent and perverted way, it's True Romance. It's brilliant. Gary Oldman, Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, there's just so many fucking people in this movie, and it's so cool. It's just so cool. Quickly, I'll wrap it up by saying that it's about two people who didn't know each other and they meet each other. Michael Rapaport is in it. And they are quickly thrown on this roller coaster of events that is entirely fueled by their insane love for one another. Really great if you haven't checked it out. My third movie,
number three,
is tough because I love Reservoir Dogs and I love Kill Bill. Kill Bill Volume 1. I like the whole idea of the Kill Bill series, but 2 is a little boring. So it has to stick with Volume 1. I don't know, man. What do you think? I'm going to phone a fucking friend here. What's the number 3?
Kill Bill's a better movie than Reservoir Dogs overall. But part of that, I think, has to do with the fact that, you know, by the time Kill Bill was made, Quentin Tarantino was made, and the fact that he could pretty much ask for the moon and they would give it to him in terms of production budget. Anybody was going to be in his movie that, you know, he asked to be in the movie. Reservoir Dogs is a very impressive movie in the fact that it's basically shot in one studio. It basically relied on acting. I mean, as violent as that movie is, it's an actor's, in my opinion, dream, because it's a lot of, it basically, to me, that movie is a play. It's essentially a play that was videotaped, because it's really taped in one area. I mean, yes, there's the scenes of the actual, you know, robbery that are cut in and things of that nature, but it's really just in that one area, and it's like two or three main people talking. Like, it's a very heavy dialogue movie, and it's good. It's a really good movie in that regard, and there's just enough violence in there to keep you interested. But overall, Kill Bill is a better movie. But I think he did a better directing job in Reservoir Dogs than Kill Bill.
Yeah, it's a tough call. They're great in their own respects for different reasons. Kill Bill is, you know, everybody likes a revenge flick, and that has every amount of revenge that you could ever hope for. She has a great story, the bride, and she kills an entire gang of 88 people, and that's very impressive.
I kind of feel on some level that Kill Bill was made just for Quentin Tarantino to try to have sex with that chick. Like, I think that he's got a huge hard on for Uma Thurman, who's in just about everything he ever does. And I kind of feel like he made that entire two-part movie with her to be the star. And she's a good actress, and it's great movies. But I feel like he made that whole thing just to be like, how can I have sex with her now that her and Ethan Hawke have broken up? There's got to be a way that I should be able to bang her. So I'm just going to make her the star with her disgusting feet. She kills everybody, and she's going to have, you know, touch my wiener with her mouth because I've just turned her into this star that she otherwise would not be.
Not want to have relations with Uma? She's a beautiful woman.
I don't have anything against the movie. I'm just saying my thoughts are he made the movie to fuck Uma Thurman. Bang.
Yeah. And fun fact, by the way, Uma Thurman was on the set of Pulp Fiction. They started writing it on Pulp Fiction. They started writing it was called The Bride at that point, and it came to fruition many years later. Honorable mention, Death Proof. Love that movie. Part of the Grindhouse thing with Robert Rodriguez. Death Proof is a lot of fun and a real great callback to sort of 60s crazy exploitation car action films. But it didn't make the top three, so fuck it. Worst three.
Number one.
I would have to start with the first time he faltered, and that was Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown was boring, man. I don't know what the fuck it was trying to do. It was this weird callback to like Pam Grier.
It was like a blaxploitation sort of movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't enough to really truly be that level of exploitation that works. And also that shit worked back in whenever the fuck that happened, the 70s. To do that in the 90s and try to make that, it just did not. There wasn't enough of a modern touch.
I didn't think Jackie Brown was that great either. I tend to agree with you on that pick.
Yeah, it was just this weird, disjointed cast of characters where, you know, Michael Keaton had done Batman and kind of, you know, did like one good cop who nobody saw that. And it was just kind of on his way to fizzling out before he actually fizzled out. Pam Grier, nobody fucking, like, everyone IMDb'd Pam Grier. Anyone, you know, living in the last couple decades had to look up who she was. Coffee Brown was not on the radar of most people. Samuel Jackson had this weird ponytail thing going on.
By the way, Michael Keaton was very good in that movie Birdman. I don't know if you saw that recently on
HBO. He was wonderful, and I love the shit. I love me some Michael Keaton. I love Multiplicity. Multiplicity is one of my favorite fucking movies
fucking
of all
hate
time.
That movie. I can't stand that movie. So you and I can probably have another discussion about this because I don't want to go on a Michael Keaton wormhole right now. I'm just saying, okay, if it's between Multiplicity and Birdman, go with Birdman. That whole thing was shot basically in one shot, an hour and a half movie.
Good.
It was a really good movie. Good. Really well done. I really
liked
that.
As well as Multiplicity. Moving on.
Terrible. You're terrible.
The second of my disappointment, and I think this is where I'm going to run into some controversy here.
People are writing letters right now because I'm going to forewarn you. I know what these picks are, folks. These are very well-liked movies, so this is going to be interesting.
Number two.
I may be referred to as a racist after this. Django Unchained. Absolute silly nonsense. I like the idea. Okay. So first of all, the idea is not original, evident. And wow, I fucked up my top three. We fucked up by only making it three because Inglourious Basterds was such a good movie. I love the shit out of that movie, and that deserves to be a part of the top three. He's got more than three great movies. But anyway, Inglourious Basterds was the first Inglourious Basterds. Django Unchained was the second Inglourious Basterds. It's basically taking the way that history went and flipping that upside down. Okay, so World War II, Inglourious Basterds. The Nazis fucked and they fucked up a lot of people, mostly Jews. Inglourious Basterds is an army of Jews who fucks up Nazis. He flipped the script. Okay, great. That's an awesome, awesome premise for World War II. We're all familiar with it. We all cheered when it happened. We all cheered when Hitler got his fucking face caved in with bullets. Wonderful alternate history story. 5 minutes later, he comes out with Django Unchained. Well, what if one of the slaves had enough and just did the opposite of the history? Yeah, you already did that. Okay, we already did that. We did that with Inglourious Basterds, and it was wonderful then. And now you're just retreading shit in a different era, in a different time, in a different place. That's boring. Like, just change it up a little bit. Jamie Foxx, awful. Fuck off, Jamie Foxx.
Wow, shots fired at Jamie Foxx.
Around the same time, he did the electro fucking spazzy guy in Amazing Spider-Man. Also, one of the worst superhero villains of all time. He played a complete loner loser, and then he gets the power of electricity, and then he takes it out on people because he fucking couldn't be enough of a human being to get people to like him beforehand, and so he just turns violent and starts attacking people because of it. Like, that's fucked up. That's your fault. That's not anybody else's fault. That's your fault. You're an asshole.
He was good in Horrible Bosses, though. Funny shit.
Yeah, for the 5 minutes he was there, and that was enough 5 minutes.
He's like the Ross Baker of Hollywood. Like, he's fine in 5 minute increments, and after that, you just move on. Yeah.
Listen, folks, don't make me remind you. He made Booty Call, and that was the biggest thing that he had ever done, okay? He's not good.
No, dude, he won the Academy Award for Ray. Like, you can't say – like, you can't just take that away from him.
That's true. I will
– He was also in A Living Color, which is better than Booty – which is actually what got him Booty Call. But, yeah, Booty Call, that's true. That's –
That takes you down a notch.
It takes you down.
And Ray, he just played an asshole, blind alcoholic. Like, I can close my eyes and drink. Anybody could get a fucking award for that role. Come on.
You must be doing it because you're drinking Coney Island ginger beer. So you are closing your eyes and drinking.
My eyes have not been open for this entire podcast.
Well, you are listening to Predictably Drunk. That is the name of this podcast. Smart people talking about stupid things. We're actually in the middle of slamming Quentin Tarantino and apparently Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx more so.
I had no idea. Michael Keaton, Jamie Foxx, Christian Slater, everybody, all of our celebrity listeners are just crying right now because Matt is just shitting all over everybody other than the guy that we were supposed to be shitting on, which is Quentin Tarantino.
Slater. I love him. He'll continue to listen.
He's a shout out to Christian Slater, by the way, on Mr. Robot, one of the best shows on television, USA Network.
Is it good?
Yeah. I've never seen it. but I heard very good things.
We're only experts on alcohol.
Yeah, so we know what we would be drinking if we happen to be watching it, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we know.
Wrap it up, Django. It was just a silly thing. I mean, the execution of it, a white bounty hunter who's wonderful. Christoph Waltz is tremendous. I love him so much. He comes along and he's like, oh, you want to get revenge on people? Okay. Like a 3 minute montage. And all of a sudden, Django is like the most confident fucking slave, oppressed slave in the history of such. Like, he goes from this really timid guy who is just getting beat down to shit to like the fucking coolest sunglasses wearing badass in the South. Like, and this happens in the course of 4 minutes. It was just too quick. It dragged on for too long.
Yeah, Matt is of the opinion that it was too quick for the uppity black guy to be so uppity. I mean, he should wait longer than 4 minutes. Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to move on to number three.
I was trying to get you off of Django. Or,
number three.
We got new segments, Matt, that we have
you
to
You did
talk
well.
About.
I'm sorry. Last one, Hateful Eight, the most boring fucking Tarantino movie and possibly movie period ever.
Oh, fuck. I just bought that.
Oh, that was a waste of money. You could have sent that money to me.
It is long. I did look on the back because I'm old. Like, I'm like, how am I going to like this movie? And it's like a 3-hour movie.
Yeah, and we went to the quote unquote roadshow version in the theaters. They did some special bullshit where they added time to this already ungodly runtime. And it's awful. It's a stage play, as a movie, and it's a stage play that's way too long. It's a movie that's way too long. And it's fucking, you see the trailer. I saw the trailer and people would say, oh, you're going to check out the new Tarantino movie, right? And I'm like, that's fucking 8 people in a cabin for 3 hours. No, that sounds like a goddamn nightmare.
It's called Reservoir Dogs with fur coats. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, well, you know what? I trust Tarantino. Maybe it's not 8 people in a cabin for 3 hours, but that's all it was. It was awful. It was. Just if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, and I get the argument that westerns can get away with that kind of shit, but if that's the case, then fuck westerns. It's not fun. It's not fun. It's not entertaining. It's an endurance test. Pass on Hateful Eight.
So we got the top 3 movies, and according to Matt Somerville, of Quentin Tarantino's life: Pulp Fiction, True Romance, which is something he wrote, and your third is what? What are we settling on as your third?
I think we tied between Kill Bill and Reservoir Dogs, but I think there was a slight edge to Kill Bill.
Yeah, but you also said you loved the
Inglorious Bastards.
Inglorious Bastards. So does that leave
time?
Okay, 3-way tie between the rest of his movies. Wonderful. And then the top 3 movies that you hate are Jackie Brown.
Yep.
Django Unchained. So the 2 black movies he made. Wow, Matt. And
there's also a black guy in Hateful Eight.
Well, there's a black guy in every single one of his movies. Yeah, I'm just saying the ones that are. And then the Hateful Eight. Okay, so I haven't seen the Hateful Eight, but it is very long. It does seem like an endurance test.
You'll never watch
Django Unchained. Does Django Unchained get better if Will Smith says yes as opposed to Jamie Foxx? Because originally I think it was Will Smith supposed to be Django, but he turned the role down.
That I don't know if that would make it worse or just the same, but he's too smiley. He's too smiley and fucking Wild Westy and Men in Blacky of a black guy. He's too like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that level of smirkiness. But it's not proper. Who should it have been? That's a good question.
Samuel Jackson. Who was actually in the movie?
He is in the movie, and he's probably one of the better parts of Django Unchained. I don't know who should have been in it, but it should not have been who it was. That's for sure.
Well, shit, man. That is happy hour right there. You guys heard it. Shots fired at Quentin Tarantino. So, you know, Matt Somerville and Jamie Foxx. Jesus Christ. Jamie Foxx took it hard tonight.
I got it out for him. Yeah, I'm going to find you.
Yeah, I wanted to spend like 5 minutes on that, and we ended up spending like a good
blew it up.
It went crazy. I didn't realize you were so passionate about Quentin Tarantino. But let's move on. We got a new segment. I'm going to have Ross announce this at some point, but basically we're calling this Stupid Drunken News, ladies and gentlemen. What this is the news that's out there that's stupid, the news that's out there that involves drunk people, sometimes both things. I mean, you can be drunk and stupid, and you can be stupid and drunk, or you can do them individually. It's really up to you. It's America. You have the choices. But we're finding just kind of the weird shit that's out there. We're going to talk a little bit about it and then just kind of end the show on a lighter note. So this one's actually about the 5-second rule. Now, Matt, you know what the 5-second rule is, correct?
I am aware of it, yes.
Yes, for the listeners out there that do not know, because surprisingly enough, I found an article on CNN.com about the 5-second rule. And if it's actually, it's like the whole history of the 5-second rule. That was a 5-second burp. That was very well done.
Hey.
It's like this whole history of where it came from. It's kind of traced back to Julia Child. The rumor is that she dropped like a ham or something on the air on the floor and then picked it up and basically said, you can pick it up if it's, you know, if you're
if
in your
the
kitchen.
The audience can't see it.
Exactly. Right. But it turns out it's bullshit. That's not what she did. What she did is she actually dropped like a potato cake and she dropped it on the stove and somehow like, you know, through a game of telephone, it got to she dropped all of the food on the ground on dog shit and then you know ate it anyways, which actually would have been a great show. I would have watched that, you know. So there's a couple things with this article that basically said that now there's been studies that are commissioned. We have the food, the scientists that are out there studying, trying to get cures for cancer, AIDS, all of the shit out there, and then we have those other level of scientists who are studying the 5-second rule.
The BuzzFeed scientists, yes.
Yeah, and these are people that get grants and get shit like that and study shit like this. I mean, it's like true Mythbusters, but for even more inane bullshit. So on some level, I'm kind of upset that I'm even having to read an article about the 5-second rule, but I think it boils down to, if you read this whole article, it's on CNN.com under their health tab. If you want to read it, I'll put a link to it in the notes of this show. But mm-hmm. basically, if you want to read it, it's basically boils down to common sense. Like, yes, the 5-second rule, if you were to drop something on the ground and pick it up right away, chances of you getting sick are probably very, very slim. However, if you were to take that same thing and drop it onto dog shit, are you going to pick it up right. in 3 seconds and be like, well, 5-second rule? No, because it landed in dog shit.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about this article that I saw is that actually this is what I was incorrect. If you drop something onto like a rug or carpet as opposed to a wood floor, which one do you think would have more germs if you were to pick it up and test it? Same piece?
I would think the carpet.
I would think the same thing, but apparently if you drop something onto the rug or carpet, it actually is very minimal amount of bacteria that will land on that piece of food as opposed to if you drop it on like a wood floor or tile or things of that nature. What's interesting as well is that they cite a 2003 study that reports that 70% of women and 56% of men surveyed were familiar with the 5-second rule. Doesn't that seem low?
No, that can't be right. That is low.
I feel my 3-year-old daughter knows what the 5-second rule is, and they're saying 70% of women and only 56% of men were familiar with it.
I feel like I could be a scientist at this point. That's some bullshit.
But the weird part about this is that women were more likely than men to eat food that had been dropped on the floor. Women are fucking disgusting, Matt. This has been my theory. You pigs out there are just eating shit off the floor. That is horrible. Stop doing that. You're never going to get married. You're never going to have children and get married if you're just eating floor stuff. Like, get a plate, you disgusting cows. What are you doing?
So your official stance on the 5-second rule is what?
Well, my findings after reading this article are that we have entirely too much money that is wasted on stupid bullshit like studies like this. My second finding is that women are way more disgusting than men, which has been my theory for a very long time. We've just been sold a bill of goods about how women are like nice and lovely and fart rainbows and men are disgusting. I think we're just more open about our disgustingness. These women are hiding it. They're like on the sneak gross.
Yeah.
This exposes it. And third, I think it's fucking use common sense, people. This is, if it's going to land on something that you just mopped, it's probably fine to pick it up. In fact, the study even says, it doesn't even after 5 seconds, if it lands in the clean area, there's not more bacteria that's going to land on it. It could sit there for fucking 5 minutes. It's going to be fine. But if you drop it into something that, you know, basically, you know, a pile of dandruff and baby guts, yeah, it's going to be disgusting after you pick it up, regardless if it's.
What about water? What about the surface you're dropping it onto? What if that's water?
Like into a puddle or like into a cup of water?
The Great Mississippi.
Well, come on. I mean, if you again, use common sense. If you're going to drop something into the Great Mississippi, fucking hate you. If you're going to drop something into a river, first of all, it's going to float away immediately for this test.
What about the bathtub that's been soaking up your own human grossness for like, I don't know, 20 minutes? You're eating a sandwich in the bathtub. Do you eat your own sick?
Dude, I don't know what goes on in LA. You guys are a fucking different breed. I mean,
bringing it up. Good questions that the article did not.
But that's it, man. That was kind of the stupid drunk.
That was fun.
Stupid drunken news. 5-second rule. CNN.com under the health tab, or you can just click on the link in the fucking bio of this. But that is the show, man. This is Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. You can find me on June 18th, Father's Day weekend. This is the last Father Day of Matt Somerville's life, where he will not officially be a father yet. But Father's Day weekend, I will be doing, I'll be being a horrible dad and on the road doing comedy at Diamond Springs at the Beef and Brew. So
where
come on
that?
Out. It's, dude, I don't know. I think it's up near, it's actually up near Placerville. I looked it up.
Is that real?
It is. $20 tickets, but myself and Joey Guila, man, Guila, fantastic, funny guy. I'm going to be doing a show with him again on July 8th at the Roddy Ranch Golf Club, July 10th at Cobb's Comedy Club. You can find me. You can go to predictablydrunk.com, click on the upcoming shows, and you'll see everywhere I'm going to be performing. Matt, anything you want to talk about before we sign off here?
I think you should just go do those things that Sam just told you about. That's,
you absolutely
that's what
should.
I want to say.
Predictablydrunk.com. You can find the entire podcast catalog. Coming up on the show next, the next show, we're actually going to talk to Mikey G. Mikey Gordon. He is a professional wrestler, Matt. He's also a stand-up comedian. This guy has a tour. He's going on a nationwide tour, and the very first stop was in St. Louis, and he got arrested coming off stage. He's agreed to explain himself and explain the horrific mugshot that he sent me.
I can't wait.
Right here on the air. I'm going to be talking to this guy. It's going to be fantastic. I got to get to the bottom of this story. It's hilarious. So stay tuned for that on the next episode of Predictably Drunk. Until then, I don't know. Listen to the soothing sounds of Ross Baker. We're going to let him make an announcement here at the end. And until next time, I guess keep drinking, right?
Keep drinking.
You've been listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux, and that other guy. What was his name again? Oh, it doesn't matter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And find the complete catalog on predictablydrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking. Passenger, that's pale, rustic. I don't think that any.